Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ, a podcast about everyday life from the spiritual, the physical, and the metaphysical perspective. Each week, I'll bring you episodes that have a casual, laid-back, informal, and spontaneous look at this thing we call life. I'm Sunny Dawn Johnston. Now let's get started. Hey there, hey there, hey there, friends. Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ. That's me, Sunny Dawn Johnston. Happy to be with you today on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon at 1:11 p.m. Pacific time here in Phoenix area anyway. I know it's 2:11, 3:11, 4:11, or wherever you are. It's a 1:11 somewhere. Anyway, come on in, guys. Say hello and go ahead and comment. Let us know where you are joining us from. We're going to get started in just a couple of minutes. I have an interview. I haven't done an interview for several months here on Off the Cuff. So I'm excited to be able to introduce you to Beck Nelson in just a few minutes. Come on in, say hello. Let's see where you're from, what's going on, how you're doing, what's happening in your world. And we'll get started in just a few minutes and bring on Beck at that time. So let's see who's with me today. All right. Hello, Jen. Hi, Rita. Good to see you, my friend. It's been a while, Rita. Good to see you. Okay. Hello, hello. Hey, Kathy from South Paris, Maine. Nice. Facebook user. So when we have a Facebook user, I don't really know where they're from, but I can still say hi. So come on in. Good to see you. Hey, Mona. Good to see you, sister. Awesome. Another Facebook user. So good to see you, my friend. Woohoo! So excited for this. Awesome. We've got some friends that are so excited, but I don't know your names, but that's okay. We don't have to. Hello, Debbie from Hawaii. What island are you on in Hawaii, Debbie? It's great to see you and have you join us as well. We're going to be talking about cutting the shit. Yep, that's what we're talking about. It's going to be a great subject. I'm sure that many of you are ready to cut the shit and get that crap out of your life, ready to be able to move forward. So Beck has written a new book, and I'm going to introduce you to her in just a couple of minutes. Hello, Robin. Hey, Rachel. Hi, Amber Marie. Hello, Cindy, sitting next to your sister. She's finally on the mend. I am so happy to hear that, my friend. We've been sending so much love. All right, Oahu. Awesome, Debbie. Thanks for sharing. Hello, Alyssa. Readjusting the world after the retreat. It's strange out here. Yes, it is. Kathy, going to see you at CYL next week. Awesome, Kathy. Looking forward to it. Hi, Sharon. Hey, Brandy. Awesome. Okay, friends. Yes, share this post. Let everybody know. We're going to get started. I'm going to bring Beck on now. So hang tight real quick. All right, my friend. Woohoo! There you are. How are you, Beck?
Hello. This is the best because I remember when I first was connected with you, I was like, that's my focus. I'm going to get on a side by side with Sunny Dawn. And here I am.
Here you are. Well, look at that. We are in manifestation receiving right now. So that's very cool, girl. Very cool. All right, Beck, I want to share a little bit about you. So our audience knows who you are and why you're here. And then we're going to jump in and see what you have to share. Okay.
Got it.
All right, friends. So here's a little bit about Beck. So Beck Nelson, LMFT, which is a licensed marriage and family therapist. I had to ask because I didn't know, is a spiritual, soulful, heart-centered healer, speaker, and author who has been serving as an expert in transformation and ascension since 1992. With a master's degree in human development, and as a licensed marriage and family therapist, Beck has the wisdom and knowledge to assist her clients in transformational healing of mind, body, and spirit. Beck's work as a psychic medium, ordained minister, and angel communicator provides a unique approach to healing that combines traditional approaches of therapy with intuitive guidance, connecting you with the most elevated version of yourself and the highest connection with your soul. That is awesome. Welcome, Beck. Happy to have you here, my friend.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yes. And I love doing a little of the Western world with a little of the intuitive world. Sometimes mixing East and West works really well. So I love that you have the combination in your work. So Beck is a best-selling author of her brand new book, Cut the Shit, Reframe Your Thinking and Regain Your Life. I know when you were thinking about that topic, that title for your book, you had a little bit of pushback because sometimes in book titles, some of you might not know that, but sometimes in book titles, they don't really like you to have swear words in it. Like that might push the boundaries a little bit. So tell me, because I remember talking with you at the time I was mentoring you, what, like you were like, no, I want the I want shit. I don't want a little exclamation point. I don't want a little star. Like I want the word. So tell me why that was so important to you and how you're feeling about it now that it's out in the world.
I feel like putting the asterisk in it sort of dulled the energy of what I was trying to say. Mm-hmm. So I feel like cut the shit is very assertive. Mm-hmm. If you put a little asterisk on there, it's suddenly, it's not so assertive.
Mm-hmm. It kind of softens it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also it's kind of censoring who I authentically am because that is who I authentically am. And I would say, so I say things like cut the shit. So, but if I was like, oh, you know, knock it off, it's just mm-hmm. not truly who I am.
Right.
And we've gotten so many messages from, you know, our individual conversations and then with the group of be authentically who you are. Mm-hmm. And then people who are supposed to be drawn to that will find you and want you because of that.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed. And I think, you know, cut the poop, cut the crap. It's like, that's not the same, right? It's not the same. So I love that you stuck with it and stayed with what you felt authentically was the message that other people would relate to. Because I think there's some of us, how many of you are watching that are like, yeah, cut the shit. That's the way I need to hear it. Like, let's just hit it right where it's at, right? So, all right. So tell us a little bit about what cut the shit is about. So reframing your thinking, regaining your life. So what is the message? I know you have some great rules in there. So why don't you tell us about a few of them, maybe pick two or three of your favorites.
So there was a couple of questions in there. So mm-hmm. I would say that this book is for anybody who's asks themselves like, why isn't my life more happy? Like I do all the right things. Like, am I being punished for something? I hear that a lot. Why is it that I feel like I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to do? And I still just feel like there's something missing. Mm-hmm. So combine that with, I had noticed over the time that I've been doing therapy that some of these rules would pop up or I guess you could also call them patterns. They were popping up with my clients repeatedly. And in my head, when somebody would say it, I'm like, oh, yep, that's the such and such rule, which I'll talk about in a minute. But in the process of, you know, when you know you have a book inside you, I'm sure there's plenty of people on here that would say that. Like, I feel like I have a book inside me, but I don't know what it is. So in the process of trying to figure out what that was, I was sitting with a client and another one of these things, patterns popped up and I was like, oh, yep, that's the such and such pattern in my head. And then I got this little tap that said, when are you going to write these down? Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, you know what? I probably should write them down. So I did. After my session, I sat and wrote them down. At the time there were 13 and now there are 14 when I did put them all on paper. And when I read them, I was like, wow, this is the book right here. So I'll give you an example of some of the patterns. The main one is playing your own sandbox, which is you are not entitled to call anybody else out on their crap. Unless, of course, that's your job, like me, right? It's my job to call people out on their crap. Mm-hmm. I get paid to do that in a controlled environment, right?
Sure.
But when you're in a relationship or when you're at work or when you're interacting with anybody else, it's not your job. You're not entitled to tell somebody else what their crap is. Play in your own sandbox, figure out what your own stuff is. If you are doing that in your head, then you're already creating a hierarchy. You're already saying, I feel like I'm in a position where I'm entitled to do that for you.
Mm-hmm. So that's like I'm better than you in some way, or I have more knowledge or wisdom than you. Therefore,
right. I'm more right than you, or I know better than you, that kind of thing. Now that doesn't mean you don't, but it's the entitlement because I feel like I'm entitled to do that because ... fill in the blank. Sure. That's really the first rule. And all the other rules fall under that category. So
don't you think that rule is kind of hard When you so you're a marriage and family therapist. So don't you think that one comes up a lot in probably in your practice as a therapist? Because especially in couples, I see a lot, because I work a lot with couples too, that they always want to bring up what they're doing wrong. Like, not what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, and do it this way because this is the way I think you should do it.
Right. And then I feel like people come as a couple because they want me to tell the other person how wrong they am to
Yep.
or to agree with them. And they don't like it when I'm like, well, have you seen it this way? And I don't think that they anticipate that. They think that they really do think that they're entitled to be right and to do what they're doing.
Beautiful. All right. So if y'all have a partner there and you're telling them how to be, that's a check number one. Don't do that. You might want to read the book so you can get a little more information about how to not do that.
So, some of the patterns you asked about, some of my favorite ones, but the one that comes up a lot is if you ask somebody to do something and then they actually do it, it still counts. That's how it's worded in the book. So what that means is if you say to Brett, "Hey Brett, you don't ever bring me flowers anymore. Don't you know you used to do that all the time." And the next day he comes home with flowers and he's like, "You know, look, I brought you flowers." And you're like, "You know what? That doesn't count because I asked you to do it." And that's a thing, right? That doesn't count.
I've heard people have. I don't have that issue because my husband's never brought me flowers, so it's okay. We're
Oh,
good. He's not a flower bringer. He brings other things, but he doesn't bring flowers.
that's not his love language. All
No.
right. But if you
So tell me what. How do people work through that? Because I hear that a lot, especially from women. Where well, I have to tell him, and I shouldn't have to tell him. And what I say is, they're not mind readers, so you got to tell them. And if that's what you want, and they're doing it, then you ought to be pleased that you are have somebody that wants to give in the way that you would like to receive. So how do people flip that back?
What I tell them is the gratitude. Gratitude is always one of the higher vibrational emotions, right? So instead of thinking about why didn't you do more, think about how grateful you are that he heard you and listened to you enough to want to bring them to you,
Sure,
as you
sure.
said. So stay in gratitude. So when I like reframe your thinking, reframe it to you just did that because I said so, to I'm grateful that you listened.
Sure. Because isn't a really foundational truth that everybody really does want to be heard. You
For
just want
sure.
to be heard. Yeah.
And then when you
That's
are heard, you tell them it doesn't count.
right.
And the other thing
And then
that.
it's not going to count the next time either. Because now it already doesn't, like, now it's kind of okay, screw you.
Right. Well, and you actually in answering that mentioned another one of them, which is people do say to their partner, "You should just know." And you know what? They don't know. So they didn't grow up the same way you do. They're not in your mind. They don't process the same way that you do. They don't just know. The example I think I gave in my book was that I had a client who had a young child, and every night she would take the bottles and wash every one of them and disinfect them, and he would just go upstairs and go to bed. And she would be so aggravated, like, doesn't he should just know that I'm up here doing these and I should now this does not mean that maybe he needs to be a little bit more observant, right? And that's exactly what I say to him. It's not that you're wrong in wanting that, but what the part is that you're holding it against him because he's not reading your mind, right? So her work is be more verbal about that, express it. And his job is, I need to be more observant because if I'm going to sleep and she's still up washing these bottles, hey, maybe I could ask her if she could use some help. So there's responsibility on both ends. I'm certainly not saying it's that person's job to do everything or change.
Sure. But the to me, the overall message in what you've shared so far is communication. Like, share what you need, express what you want, give them the opportunity to offer that to you, and have communication about why or why you do or don't need it, or why you are or aren't doing it, so you can actually have some change versus just having somebody to blame or having somebody to be pissed off at and direct your shitty energy to.
Well, that's some of it too. They're in a bad space and they don't know why. So it's because you're not doing what I want you to do, or because you're not helping me, or because you're not guessing what I need.
Yeah. Personal responsibility, right?
And that's what cut the shit is.
Yep. Cut the shit. It is. It's not. I from my remembrance of the book, It's not about ever blaming somebody else. It's about taking responsibility for yourself and your experiences and looking at what you could do to make yourself happier, which then when you're happier, then the people around you are happier, because it's just kind of a ripple effect that way.
Mm-hmm. If you're in an attitude of gratitude, then it's kind of hard for somebody else to still be that miserable when you're not. Mm-hmm. And not impossible, right, but it's a lot harder.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes for a little bit when you're happy and somebody else isn't, it just pisses them off. And then they go, oh, well, wait a minute. Okay. I'm done being pissed off. Now I'm like, why are you happy? What is going on? What do you do? What can I do different?
Mm-hmm. For sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. So Cut the Shit, guys. You can get that book on Amazon. You can go to Beck's website, which she'll share towards the end, but I'm sure it's becknelson.com. Becknelson.com. So you can go there and grab it, or you can get it on Amazon. Let's talk about some of the points that you mentioned. One of them is sometimes people create bigger problems with their intended solutions. So what do you mean by that?
This was something that I learned in grad school, and it really stuck with me. And I remember every time I do an assessment, I need to remember to say, what's the issue? What are you coming to me for? And what is it that you've tried to do to fix it? Because people typically try to fix things on their own before they come in. Mm-hmm. And I find that whatever their solution is tends to actually make things worse. Right. So I think the example I give in my book is like, if I say I'm having trouble sleeping, then I'll say, well, what have you done to try to fix that? Mm-hmm. Well, I tried exercising before I go to bed so that I'm more tired. Or I tried in the middle of the night when I can't go to bed to sleep, I get up and I get some more milk, or I try listening to some music and that sort of thing. And it's like, well, no wonder you're not going back to sleep. At this point, you're exacerbating the problem. You're mm-hmm. not going to what the original problem is.
Sure, sure.
So they're just making that worse. But in the, I think when it comes to some work with relationships, I think that people try to figure out, so if I say to my husband that you don't love me anymore, and then in his head, because guys don't necessarily talk about it, they'll say, well, I've tried to let you know that I love you more, and I'll be like, no you haven't, what have you done? Mm-hmm. And in his mind, he'll be like, well, I cleaned the bathroom when you asked me to, I brought you those flowers.
Mm-hmm. I went to work.
Yeah. Wait, I go to work, right? If mm-hmm. When your mom called, I didn't roll my eyes. I just went out of the way and let you spend some time talking to your mom. And I'd be like, yeah, but that's stuff that you should be doing anyway.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't mm-hmm. count. Mm-hmm. But in his mind, he's done all these things to try to make me feel like I'm more loved. So, sure. And it actually made things a little bit worse because he didn't talk to her about it. He just kind of did what he thought. Or what he thought that I was looking for.
Sure. Sure.
Actually, I'm thinking he didn't even bother to ask me about it.
Mm-hmm. Because as women, generally, we like to talk, like we want to communicate, like ask me what it is I need. But yet we don't always offer the same thing. So we won't necessarily share unless it's invited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the big difference between men and women, you guys will relate to this. If we say, you know what? I'm really upset. I just want to be left alone. And I storm up to the bedroom and I flop on the bed and close the door. It means please come check on me in 10 minutes.
Right. Better follow me and you better ask. That's what that means.
Give me 10 minutes. But with guys, if they like go into their man cave and they lock the door, they want to be left alone. So if we come in there in 10 minutes, they're going to come in and be like, I told you to leave me alone.
Yeah.
Right. So we're doing what we would want to have
right.
done.
Right.
Thinking about what would they really want?
For sure. For sure. That's very true. So in your book, I think you have an activity about those intended solutions, right? So and have my intended solutions created more problems. So what would that activity look like for somebody who's like, hey, I've got some challenges in my relationship, or I've got some challenges in a friendship, and I really do want to make it different. And I've tried some things, but gosh, it does seem to be, aggravating it or making it worse. What would you suggest? What is that activity that people could do?
I would write down like on the left-hand side, all the things that you feel like you've done to make that better. So what would you, if I said to you, what did you do to try to fix that? What are some of the things that you would list? So do that on the left-hand side. And then make a scale from 0 to 5, where 0 is, I don't think it worked at all. And 5 means, I think it was very effective.
Okay.
And then next to each activity, rate something, whatever your solution was, on a 0 to 5 scale. Mm-hmm. I would say if you have something that is maybe a 4 or a 5, it's probably pretty effective. If you're looking at it and it's 0 or 1, then it's probably something you shouldn't be continuing to put your effort into. Mm-hmm. But the other piece is that's just about effectiveness of the solution itself. But you can also ask yourself, has my intended solution actually, like I'm doing these things, is it actually making it worse? So go back to the example of whenever he's angry and goes into his shed and locks the door, I start banging on the door and come in. First of all, what is that really helping? 0 to 5. Do I feel like it's bringing us close together? Does he feel more listened to? If you're really listening to him, probably not, because in that example, men don't like that, right? But the other thing is, well, I mean, I've been doing it every day and it's not getting any better. Well, then why are you doing it? He doesn't feel like you're listening to him. So it's actually doing the opposite. It's doing more harm than good.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
So you have to be mindful of, is this really helping? But that particular example, it's also good to put into place with anything, right? So if I'm really feeling stressed out a lot and I'm okay, well, what do you do when you get stressed? Look, I'm having panic attacks. Well, what do you do when you have a panic attack? Well, I go for a walk, or I call my mom, or I go have a cigarette, or I buy a new sweater, blah, blah, blah. So you'd write all those things down on the left-hand side. And then you'd go to the right-hand side and say, how effective was that in helping you to not have a panic attack? Mm-hmm. Well, I call my mom, but she sometimes throws things back at me and she's not really as helpful. Okay. And then, so it helps people to think about, I'm calling my mom, but is it really making my panic attack any better? Sure. Maybe my mom is not the best person to call in that particular situation. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, she starts off by listening, but then she kind of gets preachy afterwards. And that's really not very helpful. So if it's only effective at a 2, it's probably not something that you want to keep doing.
Sure. Sure. Well, and then it probably helps you to see the pattern too, because I know a lot of times when I'm working with a client, they'll say, well, you know, I reached out, but then they just had the same response they always have. And so then it shows you the pattern of, okay, you always reach out looking for a different result than the result you always get. And so then the answer is, let's not do that. Like that's just harming. It's setting you up for sabotage, really, mm-hmm. because you're just creating more pain and disappointment in the person that you're expecting the support from, for example, in this example.
And I think there's some of the things that you don't even think about are solutions, which is some of the things that I help to tease out. Like when I said, I go out and smoke a cigarette or I buy a new sweater, some people don't realize that they're doing that in an effort to try to resolve their issue, to try to quell their stress or something like that. It's like when people have a drink, you know, a drink feels really great when you're buzzed, but then there's all these problems that it creates. Sure. So I don't think that people realize that they're doing it with the intention of trying to resolve their issue.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's good to be able to write it out so you can see all of the things that you are associating with it, even if they're working or not. Because a lot of times then they have their own negative results, like maybe the drinking, or if you buy a sweater every single time you're upset and you live in Arizona, you have a lot of sweaters that you don't wear, right?
Sweater's a bad example when I'm talking to people.
But it gives you an idea so that you're just putting the attention somewhere else. It isn't really resolving the issue.
And on the other end, there might be some things that you do that you say, well, every time I do this, I have great results. Like I listen to my favorite music, or I go to the hot shower. Those might be getting you some really high scores. So those are the ones that you want to do more often. And then I also say, well, combine them, listen to music while you're in the shower.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure. And that's shifting the energy, therefore shifting the focus and creating some space to have some tools to deal with whatever it is you're dealing with. I know for me, one of the things when I was pissed when my kids were younger was my house was clean. And if I was cleaning, like you could tell, cleaning, normal cleaning. But if I was cleaning like this kind of cleaning, you know, like you're dusting and you're like, then that was it helped because I moved the energy and my house was clean, but everybody around me knew mom's mad, right? Because I'm not just cleaning like that just because I'm happy, right?
Well, the other thing that it could tease out is some things are, we'll use cleaning for as an example, right? Some people, yeah, they feel better when they clean, but then they get to a point where they're like, oh, I gotta do this. So they kind of do it for a little too long. Mm-hmm. So like, okay, give yourself a time limit. So I'll clean for the next hour and then I'll reevaluate instead of keep it going. Or I really like to journal, but there's a point where you're getting too stuck in that, like journal it, close your thing, put it in your underwear drawer, and then give yourself some space to move on.
Mm-hmm. Don't everybody put it in their underwear drawer, because then we're going to know where to find your journals. So awesome. All right. What's one of the main barriers to making change last?
Having an audience. I think that you need to have at least one person that if you're going to make changes to discuss those changes with, tell them what your plan is. Because if not everybody is going to be excited about the fact that you want to do things differently. Some people appreciate or like the fact that you're in the role of the crazy person who loses their shit every time such and such happens, right? Because if you're the crazy one, then they can all point at you and say, look at you, you know, you overreact. It's not them, it's you. So not everybody's going to be happy that you're changing that rule, that role. So I think you need to talk to other people and say, this is what I intend to do. So if you're going to, for example, I don't know, lose weight, right? Then tell your partner, tell somebody that you're around, like, I'm going to be trying to lose weight and here's how I'm going to do it. So if I start to lose weight, then there's already a discussion about like, what would that be like for you? Mm-hmm. So what would that be like for your partner? As an example, if I lose weight, you know, I'm probably going to feel really good about myself and I might have a lot more confidence and I might be, you know, prettier. Like, and you would think that that would be a good thing, but what's it like for you? If I'm making these changes, are you going to be worried about, you know, am I going to be leaving you, or, you know, somebody else going to want me? Like, we need to talk about those things. Mm-hmm. So other people can unknowingly sabotage your results because they're fearful of that change. And you can also do the same thing for yourself.
Sure. Just ignore that. Ignore that.
I think that people are so used to the roles that they're in that when they perceive that that role is going to be changed, that you're going to see pushback.
For sure. I'm sure many of you that are listening have experienced that in one way or another, because there's this comfort zone, right? People get into a comfort zone and they like you the way that they like you. So when you change, it oftentimes, don't you think, makes them have to look at themselves. They don't want to do that. So it's easier to look at you.
Well, if you're skinnier, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And who are you? And I know that you've said a lot of times that like a lot of husbands don't like you because their wives come back to them, or their spouses come back to them more confident and everything. And they're like, oh, I don't know if I like that.
For sure. When I first started teaching, I had several women whose husbands like told them they couldn't come to the class because they were changing too much and they weren't showing up. They weren't there to make dinner that night or whatever it was. And when the women at first would be like, well, I'll make it before. And then, you know, a few weeks into classes, they're like, you can make your own dinner. They're like, okay, this sunny person, she's not good for you.
Right. Uh-huh. And really the deep down fear of that is if I feel like you don't need me anymore, yeah, right? If you have your own life, then maybe you'll decide that you don't need me either. Maybe you'll change me.
Yeah. 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 And it's just fear, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. Very good. Okay. So yeah, one of the things I recognized, in kind of the barriers is that, and I love this that you said, is, you know, sharing it with people. Like I think sometimes when we're going to do scary things that we're uncomfortable with, it's really important, whether it could be a therapist, it could be a counselor, it could be a mentor, it could be a friend, but we want to share that because I know, like for me, when I left my son's birth father, I left a lot of times and then I came back a lot of times because I didn't tell anybody, right? I'd leave and then I'd sit for a couple of days and I'd be like, well, this is dumb. And I'm just going to go back. And then finally, the time that I actually stuck with it was when I knew myself. I told everybody, because that way, and this really was my thought at this time. I wouldn't use these words now, but at that time I was like, I need everybody to call me out on it, because I will feel so ashamed of that decision that it will, I will please them before I'll please myself. So that shame would trigger me into doing what I knew I needed to do for myself, but I didn't have the courage to do. So when I, if I were to say, never mind, don't come, or don't bring the truck, or I am not going to do it now, everybody would have been on me. And I think that helps when you know, especially when you know your personality, you're not showing up in your accountability for yourself.
And also know the right people to tell that.
Share it with. Yes. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be everybody, but it's worthy of having a discussion of what, how are you going to feel if these changes happen? Because sometimes if you just talk about the fear, it releases the energy of them. They don't have the power.
Sure. Sure. Beautiful. All right, friends. So that's just a little bit of what's going to be in the Cut the Shit book. So I'm sure you want to go grab it. If you don't already have it, go to Amazon and get it. Cut the Shit by Beck Nelson, or you can go to her website, becknelson.com, and it's B-E-C-C Nelson.com. And you can grab a book there as well. All right, Beck. So we're going to do a few just off the cuff questions, because that's what we do on Off the Cuff, is we do off the cuff questions. So first question is, what was your first job?
I was a lifeguard at the YMCA. And so that this, the YMCA pretty much like saved my life, because my parents needed a solution after school, because my mom had gone back to work. And I remember being a teenager, and my father was a very violent alcoholic. And so he kept us very sheltered. And now I know more about why he did at the time. But looking back, it was the first time that I had a place where I felt like I was a part of a tribe, and people cared about whether I was coming or not. And I really felt cared for. So I'm a big proponent of the YMCA, mm-hmm. beautiful organization. So I stuck with them. I was a counselor in training before I was old enough to get paid. And then I was a counselor there for the summer camps, and then I got trained as a lifeguard. I went through their lifeguard certification program, and they don't usually hire anybody, at least at the time, until they were 18. So they had to go in front of the board to ask special permission to hire me before I was 18. So I was their first and youngest lifeguard under the age of 18 at the YMCA by us.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad that it served you so well for where you were in your life. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I was a lifeguard myself, although I never did any work, but both of my kids were lifeguards and did that for their first couple of years for their job. So, and just last year I got to witness, we were at Lake Powell, and I actually got to witness both of them. There was a guy and his son that their canoe sunk, and they were on a clear wall. There was no place to go, and they were exhausted. Half of one of the kids had come out of his life jacket, and I got to witness both of those kids fly into that water and pull those guys out. And it was one of the heartwarming mama moments, like, oh, lifeguard, yes. That was a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's my baby.
Yeah, that was awesome. That's awesome. Yep, I love that too. Okay, second question. If you had the ability to instantly manifest anything you wanted in your life, boom, right here, right now, what would it be?
That my home and property were prepared to receive guests and have the healing center here that I want.
That's awesome. That's a great answer. I think there's some energy there. Let's move that forward.
Who's got a wand?
That's awesome, Beck. All right. Over the past year, what is an item that you have purchased that you absolutely love, maybe even feel like you couldn't live without?
It's probably bad to say my...
It beeped out. I didn't even hear what you said.
I said my iPad. I can't say my iPad.
You can say whatever you want.
Well, I don't know if I purchased it a year ago, or I updated it a year ago, but I love how on is this horrible, right? Because it's a tech thing, but I love how I can pretty much rule the world from my iPad, right? I can serve clients, I can check my rankings on Amazon, I can read my next book, I can text message my husband, I can look at pictures from my vacation this summer. Like it's like your whole life is in this little box.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it? It's kind of crazy that 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, that didn't it wasn't even a thing.
I could play a game. I could watch mo a movie. I could catch up. I can entertain myself while I'm on at the gym. I'd be lost without it.
All right, last question. Well, I got two more. What is one of your favorite memories of your childhood? You can tell these are off the cuff because they don't know the answers yet. They got to think about it for a second.
It's unfortunate that I really have to put it would take it takes a lot to pull that out. One time we went as a family, the four of us went skiing in New Hampshire, and it was a we were cross-country skiing, so we were trying it out in the White Mountains, which was beautiful. We usually went in the summer, but never the winter. So it was beautiful in the winter. And my parents wanted to try cross-country skiing and had no idea that what 3 or 5K was. They're like, only a couple miles. So we were young and they strapped on cross-country skis to us and we did a 5K, which as you know is over 3 miles. I had no idea, but I distinctly remember just being outside and being like, I don't know when the hell this is going to end, but my parents couldn't go anywhere because they had to stick it out. They had to finish it with us, so they were not distracted. Like they had to focus on
Sure.
us.
Yeah, that's a great memory. Yeah, beautiful,
Never
beautiful.
forgot what a kilometer was after that.
Right, you're like it's exactly 3.274, whatever it is. I don't know exactly, but I know it's somewhere in there, miles. Okay, last question. If you could have a billboard anywhere in the world that said anything that you wanted, what would it say and where would it be?
It would probably say something with the word shit in it. It would probably say mind your shit or cut your shit. So I feel like that's the biggest problem that I see both in my personal life and professional life is people don't mind their own shit. They're so busy thinking about what other people are doing. Where would it be? It would probably be, I want to say my first thing that popped up was near the state house where I live. Because who needs to cut the shit more than people, politicians?
Maybe that's a good place.
But it's also in the city, right? So it's where people drive by it a lot,
Sure.
right next to
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a good place. It's a good reminder, right? We all could cut the shit, right, everyone?
I think that's a quicker way of saying you don't have the right to judge other people. But it's easier. So I just cut it back by saying cut the shit. That's what I mean by that.
Sure. Yeah. Get out of that space and focus on yourself. Right?
Take responsibility.
Yeah, sure. All right, friends. So, Beck, thank you very much. It was a beautiful time chatting with you. And so I want to give you the opportunity to leave the audience with any message you would want to share and also give them your website one more time. I know you have a free gift if they go to your website, so let them know how they can get there as well.
So there's actually there's two free gifts that are waiting for them. One is if you download the Kindle version of the book, there's a place in there where you can download a companion journal and it's space to be able to process your way through the rules.
Okay, great.
Well, if you go to my main page, becknelson.com, you can take the What is Your Self-Sabotage Specialty quiz and find out what your self-sabotage specialty is. There's four different ones, and it kind of gives you a little bit of feedback about which one is yours and some things that you can do to work through that. Just it's like a little taste of that. A couple of things that I wanted to leave people with is first, like what I said to you when I first came on, that One thing that I think you actually said it to me, it wouldn't surprise me, would it? That there's always somebody, like, you just need to be one step ahead of wherever your people are. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, you come on thinking I need to accomplish all these things before I can finally step into a role of leading. But I look back, I just finished my book, and still in my head, I'm like, that's not enough. I still need to accomplish all those things. But mm-hmm. then I know that there's people that are just one step behind me saying what I was saying a year ago, which exactly. is, I know there's a book inside me. Can I actually accomplish that? So all you have to do is show up and say, look, I did this thing. You can do it too, because I was where you were a year ago, and it's completely possible.
Yeah. That's great. That's great advice, because it's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. And I have, I'm actually looking at the Buddha. I don't know if you remember the wooden Buddha I had bought from one of your sales, which I'm sure when I was stressed out was, and he's doing this as a mudra. And I would love to know what that is.
Well, I think that is open heart, but I'm not positive. If one of you that are online knows that for sure, you can go ahead and share. There is a website you can actually look up all the mudras to see what they're representing. And I'm not positive. For some reason, it seems to me that it's open heart, but I could be wrong. So,
well, whatever it is, it's probably what I need to know, what I need to focus on every day. So,
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. All right, friends. Hey, give some love to Beck. Thank you, Beck, so much for joining us. Again, her book is Cut the Shit. You can grab it on Amazon or on her website, becknelson.com. Have a beautiful rest of your day, friends. And thank you, Beck. Have a good one, honey.
This was one of those things, right?
That's right. You just checked one off your list. Woo! All right. Good job. Bye, friends. Thank you so much for listening to Off the Cuff with SDJ. If you gained some knowledge, if you felt a connection, if you got some ahas or insight into this thing we call life, if you feel like you're a little more elevated than you were before you listened to this podcast, then please subscribe to this podcast. And if you're already signed up, please rate and review it. I'd greatly appreciate it. If you want to get more information about me and what I have to offer, go to my website, sunnydonjohnston.com. Thanks so much, my friend, and I hope to see you next week.